and welcome back to Beneath the Surface. I'm Susie Wiseman. We're going to continue our look at scandals, local and national, this time national, and looking at the scandal and the crisis, really, with the treatment of veterans. It turns out that the fallout of the Walter Reed scandal, I guess you could say, just turns out to be the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg. And I've asked Nation writers Joshua Kors and Ari Berman to tell us what happened to vets and why. Both of them have written in the April 9th issue of The Nation magazine about the crisis on the treatment of vets. Joshua Kors is a freelance journalist based in New York. His article in The Nation is called How Specialist Town Lost His Benefits. And Ari Berman is based in Washington, D.C., and he's a contributing writer for The Nation and is also a Puffin Foundation writing fellow at The Nation Institute. And he takes a look at what Congress should do and who favors fixing this funding hole. But we're going to start with Joshua Kors. Welcome to Beneath the Surface, Joshua.
Good to be here, Susie.
Thanks for joining us. Well, I guess, you know, your article, first of all, congratulations on it. It's quite good. Maybe you should start by telling the listeners, introducing the scandal by telling what happened to Specialist Town.
Absolutely. John Town, specialist in Ramadi, Iraq, he was just a few feet away from an explosion, a rocket that struck their base and knocked him unconscious. After that, he became largely deaf and had headaches, memory loss, anger problems, all the kind of symptoms that one would associate with traumatic brain injury. Came back to Fort Carson, Colorado, where he was originally stationed, and they determined he wasn't combat ready. But the strange twist in his story is that instead of dismissing him because of his injuries, they dismissed him under a 513, which is a pre-existing personality disorder. And by doing that, they found a way to discharge him in just 5 days and never have to pay him disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life.
I think most of our listeners are going to be pretty astonished to hear this, that it's possible that someone who gets a brain injury or any kind of injury, but especially a brain injury, because that seems to be the, you know, the most common one now in Iraq because of the IEDs, that you could lose your benefits because it could be misdiagnosed and even deliberately done so. How many others are in the same boat, and can you explain what this means in terms of misdiagnosing?
Absolutely. Well, there are a lot in his boat, and the more I researched, the more I got to speak with him. Over the past 6 years, 22,500 have been discharged under this personality disorder provision just in the last 6 years alone. And, what really unites all of those people is nothing. I found cases as varied as someone having a hernia to, in John's case, deafness.
Wait, so a hernia is a personality disorder?
Yes, in the
case. No, I can't believe that.
Absolutely. In one of the cases I studied, Richard Dykstra, that is what they determined. In William Woldridge's case, he was having schizophrenic-type delusions. He had run over a young girl in his truck in Iraq and was being haunted by her ghost. Girl kept coming back to him in his apartment in Arkansas asking why he had killed her. They determined that was a pre-existing personality disorder, something he had before he joined the Army, even though his medical records, just like John's, report him as perfectly healthy before he joined.
Well, I think you've just mentioned the three magic words that everybody in the listening audience can relate to, and that's pre-existing condition, because it seems to be the way that insurance companies here in the United States at least deny coverage to individual policy holders and prevent them from, you know, it's part of our big crisis. But now you're saying that the military is doing the same thing?
They are. And, you know, when you look at the system, obviously, it seems like it needs to be fixed. We have all of these cases that are clearly misdiagnosed to the point where it has to be purposeful. But the system as it's set up is actually perfect. These soldiers are screened twice before going to Iraq, first when they first join, and then later before they're deployed. It just so happens that in each of these cases, those psychological screenings reveal absolutely nothing, perfectly healthy soldiers. It's only when they come back from being wounded that they suddenly discover that they had been wounded by a psychological condition from their very first day.
Well, before we ask Ari to join us, Joshua, can you talk a little bit about how the military doctors, because you say this in your Nation article, how Specialist Town lost his benefits, that the military not only regularly misdiagnoses soldiers, but they do it deliberately to avoid taking care of them, and they deliberately get them to sign these 513s, which I want you to talk a little bit more about. It seems to be business as usual, but the deception perhaps is not the usual part of it, or is it?
Sure. Well, if you talk to any soldier about a 513, they would look at you blankly. It's all in the fine print. what they should be asking for is a med board. That's when the doctors at the hospital take 6 months to evaluate the soldier. Instead, with the 513 discharge, they can be done within a week. It's only that the doctors are assuring them that they'll get to keep their benefits, that they'll get disability pay, and also get to keep their bonuses. I think that's another sour twist to these soldiers' stories. Because they have to give back their bonuses, so many of these wounded veterans find out on their final day they actually owe the Army several thousand dollars.
So they've not only been cut off, they're going to face a lifetime, maybe, of medical bills that the military's not going to pay, the government's not going to pay. But in addition, you're saying that they have to pay back money to the government?
That's right. That's right. And, of course, when you have wounded vets who can't really work, that's just a straight road into debt. They have thousands they owe the Army.
Funny way of supporting the troops, huh?
It certainly is bizarre, and I think that's why it's drawn so much outrage.
Well, let me bring Ari Berman into this conversation, because he's based in Washington, D.C., and does a lot of reporting on the shenanigans in Congress, even on both sides, not just one side. Ari, first, welcome to Beneath the Surface in this discussion.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. And I just want to say to Joshua, it's an amazing, powerful, really, really amazing piece.
I couldn't agree
more. It's the kind of piece where I'm in Washington all the time, and I read about a lot of bad news. And it's the kind of piece that just strikes you and just wrenches your heart. And you say, as a Democrat or a Republican, how can this happen? Why are they doing this? So I commend him for getting the story out there.
I want to ditto on that one, because not only that, I mean, I read it and I'm just still like, I'm stupefied. It's just stupefied. And I think most people will be. And I believe even for the most, energetic cost cutters, that they too would wince knowing that people are being deliberately cut out this way. I'm saying that for both sides, but I don't know if that's true. I'm just assuming that would be the case. But Ari, let's ask you, what impact in real money terms did the Walter Reed scandal have on the way that Congress is dealing with this issue?
Well, it has a big deal just because it finally exposed what was really happening to the treatment of these troops. I mean, we had heard for years these sort of stories coming out, especially since the Iraq War started, about soldiers not even, first thing, not being sent to battle with the right equipment, but getting out and basically being on their own. And the Bush administration, while they rhetorically said, support the troops, what they did is they really tried to cut costs in every way at home. So, for example, when the Republican chairman of the Veteran Affairs Committee wanted to add more money to VA health care in 2003, Chris Smith from New Jersey, they kicked him off the committee. That's amazing, right?
It is.
Republican congressman from New Jersey says, we want more money for the troops. They said, no, you need to be off the committee. Not just lose his chairmanship, lose the whole committee seat. They put in an Indiana Republican, Steve Boyer, who's a very hard-line conservative Republican evangelical, and the first thing he tells the veterans groups is, enough is enough in wartime. So you can only imagine. And it's just a whole scheme they ran, basically. I mean, the VA used basically fraudulent accounting practices to keep the amount of money they said the veterans needed down. The administration pressed them to keep the budget low. Finally, this year, the budgets got better. But the problem is, it's still not enough. I mean, you have this amazing problem of Iraq and Afghanistan war vets. They're living longer from these injuries, like Joshua described. But the problem is, they're totally screwed up because of them.
Right, so, and the other side of it, too, is that we keep seeing on every documentary that, you know, you have these incredible ability of doctors to save people who were injured who in other wars would be killed.
Exactly.
But they're not talking about the number of disabled. And maybe Josh knows this figure, but isn't it in the, like, 100,000, something like that, people who have been wounded and who are maimed?
It certainly is. You know, and I think Ari hit on a good point, too. Politically, this is not left or right. I don't think you'll find a politician in Washington who wants to shortchange the soldiers regardless of the cost. It's just a matter at this point of fixing a broken system from the ground level up.
Well, let me ask Ari that one, because even as I was reading your article, Josh, I was thinking about this is just encapsulates the broken healthcare system in the U.S. Why do we have to create a separate sector just for the military if we had a national healthcare system that treated everyone and was delinked from employment? Then would this be a problem?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing is that VA healthcare is actually very good in terms of the healthcare you receive. The problem is one is the facilities, but two is just the wait to get the healthcare. I mean, there's all these soldiers already who have these backlog waiting to get treatment and then waiting to get disability compensation. Then you have all these new influx of Iraq and Afghanistan vets who now need to be treated. So the system is really just very, very strained, and it's ironic because the new chairman of the House Veteran Affairs Committee, Bob Filner, is this lefty Democrat from California.
Right.
He never served in Vietnam. His dad was in World War II, but he doesn't really come from a military background. He was getting a PhD in the history of science during the war in Vietnam. He was a college professor teaching history for 20 years. And this is a guy who's championing the troops, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just see how everything's been inverted in the last 6 years. And the people that are caring for our troops are these liberal Democrats. The people that are saying, no, you can't treat the troops, it's too much money, it's too expensive, it's too socialized medicine, that's Tom DeLay, that's George Bush, that's the head of the VA right now, Jim Nicholson. So in some ways, the whole support the troops motto has been sort of inverted in the last few years, and we see that very much in veterans care.
Well, I think you wrote in your piece in The Nation, also in the April 9th issue, that the Bush administration has been running the war on terror expensively abroad and cheaply at home, and that would explain it. But it's also part of their mantra, because they really are anti-government. And Paul Krugman has been writing for some time in the New York Times about how, just what you said, that the VA system was one that worked, that Clinton beefed it up during his administration, and that they haven't been funding it ever since. Is this just a problem, an ideological problem on the part of the administration, or is it something else?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask them, honestly. I don't really know what they would say. I think that they were just unprepared for this, just like they were unprepared for the aftermath of the war. Just
so,
like,
I mean, you mean in terms of the amount of veterans needing treatment?
In terms
treatment,
of the massive numbers coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, we were supposed to be out of Iraq in 3 months.
Yeah,
there weren't supposed to be injuries.
Right.
There wasn't
bring it back to a personal
occupation.
Level.
Okay, Josh?
To bring it back to a personal level, the bitterness that I think you're talking about is key here as well. These soldiers thought they were going to be welcomed with open arms, as you said, support the troops, right? As one of the army workers who was involved in this scandal said, it's much easier to support the troops when they're dead, much cheaper. And these soldiers come back, the whole system gets inverted. The army becomes the enemy, as one of the soldiers said to me, the doctors who misdiagnosed him at Fort Carson were no better than the enemy they fought in Iraq. That kind of flip of mentality just shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, it just to piggyback off that, I mean, you say, what can Congress do? The first thing they can do is just prioritize this. I mean, this shouldn't have taken Walter Reed to get this out there. There were many documentaries, there were stories. we knew this was going on, and it just took this story to even make it in the front page consciousness. And it should be a given that in wartime we're going to take care of our soldiers. That shouldn't be something that we even have to debate.
Well, Ari Berman, what are they doing right now? What's happening in Congress? You mentioned, and you write in your piece about Congressman Bob Filner, and you, as you mentioned, he wasn't someone who really came through the military,
No. But
he's working really hard on this issue. This is a contrast, you know, from the previous period where we get a lot of Michael Browns in positions like this, just hacks who don't care or who, you know, who are being rewarded for their loyalty. But what is Congress doing right now?
Well, the first thing they did is they added more money for health care, you know, somewhere between $2 and $5 billion in the latest budget. So that's the first step. I mean, the second thing is they're holding a lot of hearings because in some ways they have to diagnose this problem before they can fix it. I mean, the transition between active duty and the VA is broken. It's totally broken. There's amazingly long waiting lists. The whole process just doesn't work. There's no electronic records kept. When you go from active duty to VA, they don't have you in a computer that says this is this person's condition. I mean, it's the Stone Age over there in some ways. So they need to get all this stuff up to date. They need to cut down on the bureaucracy. They need to make the bureaucracy work better. They need to give more money, and they need to consistently oversee the VA facilities. When I asked veterans groups for this story, like the VFW American Legion, I said, what do you guys want? They said, we want someone who's going to oversee the VA. We need them to do their job well. And one of the things that Filner wants to do is he wants to send VA and former soldiers, he wants to send vets out to these hospitals to examine them with investigatory power and report back. You know, I don't know if that'll work or not, but it's certainly the sort of fresh idea that sort of needs to be implemented to get beyond this sort of lower-level, middle-level bureaucracy that's just weighing everything down at this point.
But this seems to be a problem throughout. You know, this isn't just with the veteran care. It's what we saw in post-Katrina as well, that, you know, at every level, government is weighed down by unbelievable bureaucracy that, in a way, echoes what I think was the message of Joshua's article, that they're deliberately trying to cut spending by adding layers of bureaucracy and treating anybody who needs to get benefits or money in any way as somehow undeserving, and in this case deliberately misdiagnosing them. But it's going to redound, is it not, to the problem anyway? These people still have these injuries. Who's going to be treating them?
Yeah, that's right, Susie. I think the flow of funds and information really are clogged. You know, you look at all of the veterans advocates I spoke to over the last 6 months. All of them knew about this problem of doctors in the Army purposely misdiagnosing their patients. But yet when a colleague of mine went and met with the Deputy Surgeon General about this, they were shocked. They had never heard about this at all. It's, you know, if we're going to get help to these soldiers and fix the system that's purposely misdiagnosing them, the upper ups in Washington at least need to know what's going on.
Well, let me just ask you quickly. We only have a few minutes left, but Joshua, is there any case where some of the people that you interviewed who've been cut off or even been made to pay back, as you said, are getting legal advice on how to maybe even sue the government or do something to get redress?
Well, yeah, you know, there is a system for redress. In William Woldridge's case, he was able to get his personality disorder discharge overturned by a military board. But most of the times, it's just done by behind-the-scenes dealing. And John's case is a great example. When he went to his congressman for some help, that congressman went to the Pentagon for some information. Pentagon called him and gave him an ultimatum, said, hey, listen, we'll pay back, we'll forgive the debt that you owe the Army if you just give up on getting your personality disorder discharge overturned.
Oh, my God. Well, that's hardly a solution, but I guess it's better than having to pay back the money. We pretty much run out of time. No, I guess we have about 2 minutes left. So I'm trying to get them from my producers how much time we have left. But Ari, I want to ask you, because you've talked about the bureaucracy and the problems in the Congress, are you at all confident that this situation will get fixed in time for this group of vets?
Well, I don't know when it will get fixed. I mean, the problems are so massive. But, I mean, the Army doesn't need to be doing what they're doing, what Joshua describes. I mean, that just doesn't need to happen. I mean, that's just sort of, they could just overturn that and say, we're not going to do this anymore. And heads have to roll, too. I mean, the only way you fix this problem is they'll start holding people accountable. We have a head of the VA who's only there because he was the former head of the Republican National Committee.
So he is another Michael Brown.
He is. That's what people are calling him. Yeah, veterans, people are saying this isn't the next Mike Brown. I mean, he has no business being in that position to begin with. So it starts with accountability, and then it starts with prioritizing these issues. And it's sad. I mean, there's so much money that's being spent on this. I mean, our defense budget keeps getting larger and larger and larger. And I think people have to ask themselves, why are we spending money on weapons that don't work instead of troops that are injured and wounded and maimed?
Well, that's a really good question.
If that's not our national defense, I don't know what is.
I think the answer is attention and investigation. Right now, the military officials I spoke to are able to get by with just flat denials. It would be great to see a congressional hearing in which flat denials simply wouldn't cut it.
Well, on that note, and let's hope that that gets translated into reality. But I want to thank both of you for joining us and congratulate you both for writing this great series of articles on treatment of veterans and how it exposes so much about the way the war is run and our own health care crisis. I've been speaking with Joshua Kors and Ari Berman. They both have articles in the April 9th issue of The Nation magazine. Joshua Kors is a freelance journalist based in New York. His article is How Specialist Town Lost His Benefits. And Ari Berman is based in Washington, D.C., and is a contributing writer for The Nation and a Puffin Foundation writing fellow at The Nation Institute. Thanks to both of you for joining us and exposing this scandal.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you.
Thank you, and don't go away. We're going to come back and talk about yet another one, and that one has to do with the subprime mortgage lending scandal. Don't go away. We'll be right back.